Welcome to Behind the Headlines, where we're about to take you right across the UK looking at some of the stories we've been covering. Today, we've been talking about the help or lack of given to children with special educational needs.
Parents are self-diagnosing their children because that's the only way that parents can actually deal with things now that they have to self-diagnose because they're not getting the diagnosis early enough.
We're in Southport, where a decision has been made to start taking down the tributes to three little girls who were killed.
This is very much guided by families, the school communities.
And Strictly star Oti Mabusi has been speaking about the challenges that she and her partner face raising a mixed race child. My name's Louise Easton, and I'm going to be your host over the next 10 minutes or so on Tuesday, the 15th of October, 2024. We're starting with a story about funerals, as calls are being made to urgently reform the sector. They come from the chairman of an inquiry which was launched into how the crimes of killer David Fuller went unnoticed. He was convicted of murdering two women in Kent in 1987 and later found to have abused the bodies of women in the mortuaries of hospitals for more than a decade. Well, our reporter Jamie Lee Rendell joins me for this one. Jamie Lee, first, just talk me through what type of training or qualifications do you need to become a funeral director?
Well, essentially none, which might shock a lot of people. The author of this report, Sir Jonathan Michael, says many assume that is the case, but realistically, anyone can set themselves up as a funeral director. They don't need a licence, any qualifications, they don't even need training. So he's highlighted that in an extreme example, they could do it from their home and keep the bodies of the deceased in their garage if they wanted to. And currently there's nothing really in place to stop them. In fact, Sir Michael has described it as an unregulated free for all.
And why are these calls being made now?
Well, because Sir Michael says he's expedited the inquiry's work in light of recent distressing reports of neglect in the funeral sector. In Hull, police are investigating a funeral director's following allegations of neglect. He's hoping that by publishing this report now, it will help the government and the funeral sector itself take steps to assure the public that the care given to their loved ones is fit for purpose.
And has there been any response from the government?
Yes, so Health Secretary Wes Streeting has said the government is committed to preventing any similar atrocities happening again and ensuring that the deceased are safeguarded and treated with dignity. Well, just to end on a slight positive, Sir Michael has said since the inquiry started in 2021, he's spoken to more than 150 individuals and organisations and found that those he's spoken with have been caring and professional. But he does say, sadly, there are exceptions, hence the need for these regulations.
Okay, thanks, Jamie Lee. Next, we're hearing from the family of a talented content creator from South Yorkshire who recently died by suicide. They've been speaking to us as they say they don't want others to go through the nightmare that they're living in. 35-year-old Johnny Gascoigne, who lived in Sheffield, took his own life last month after battling with mental health issues for a number of years. Our senior reporter Chris Davis-Smith has been speaking to Johnny's dad, Kevin, in a broadcast exclusive.
Just over a month ago, Johnny Gascoigne shared these words of advice to his thousands of followers on the popular Sheffield United YouTube fan channel, The Shoreham View.
Reach out to somebody or someone, because this world's a better place with you, I promise.
Tragically, just days later, Johnny took his own life. Now, Johnny's dad, Kevin, tells me exclusively that he wants to keep his son's final words alive. What would your message be, Kevin, to anybody who may be going through something similar to what Johnny experienced in his final days?
Talk about it. You've got to let your feelings come out. It's a man thing. We don't let our feelings come out sometimes. You've just got to let go and talk about it. If it's playing in your head, get it out of there. Don't keep it in. Let it out.
If you could, just try and put into words how difficult it's been since Johnny's tragic death.
It's your worst nightmare. He's left two kids behind, Billy and Alice. You just can't explain to people. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Since 2014, Johnny managed to build up a following of over 8,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel, with the content getting more than 1.5 million views. His funeral will take place later this month.
England's Children's Commissioner's warning there's an invisible crisis in young people's mental health services and the entire special educational needs system. Rachel D'Souza says parents and young people are suffering because of long waiting lists for diagnoses for things like autism. A report reveals some children are going to primary school still wearing nappies because they haven't been able to get the help that they need. Our reporter Tom Claiborne has been speaking to mum Lucy Oakes from Norwich. Her son has autism.
What do you make, I suppose, of the findings of this report and the scale of what they're calling an invisible crisis?
If I'm honest, I'm not surprised. This has been an issue for many, many years. You need the diagnosis to gain the support, and without the diagnosis, you then don't get the support. Paediatricians are the only people that can prescribe medication for children. You can't just go to the GP and get medication. You've got a lot of parents that are pulling their hair out. I know for a fact that my child has got autism, but we've been sat for 4 years waiting for someone to give him that diagnosis.
And what needs to be done, I suppose, to go and reduce this waiting list and ensure that, you know, yourselves get a diagnosis ASAP after the wait?
I honestly don't know. They need to put some more funding in, or they need to employ more people to be able to do this.
And if these waits continue, what could that mean for, I suppose, your family, but also others as well across the country?
I believe that more parents are going to end up facing being parent blamed. Their children won't be able to access the correct support. For my instance, my son, when he is dysregulated, he can have massive meltdowns. And a lot of the time, I am bitten because I'm his safe space. If you're an adult, you can go to the GP and they can chuck medication at you. So why are the children not getting it?
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. The families and friends of the three little girls killed in the Southport knife attack say the time is right to start removing tributes. There are concerns the constant reminder of what happened is re-traumatising for those closest to the victims. Our regional correspondent Victoria Glover has been speaking to the council and joins me now. Victoria, what's the message from them?
Yeah, they're telling us that grieving families and primary school teachers have raised the issue of how these ribbons in locations across Southport can be quite triggering for children and adults alike who were closely impacted by what happened, prompting memories of those events. I've been speaking to Councillor Dave Neary, who's now asking the community to consider taking them down.
Sometimes it even affects me when I'm driving round and it brings back some memories. So want to work with people, but this is very much guided by families, the school communities.
As for a permanent memorial, we know that idea is in the pipeline. There's no timeline or firm decision on that yet, but the council's working with families to create the most appropriate tribute to the victims.
Okay, thanks, Victoria. Staying with the theme of remembering, and we go to Southend now, where a memorial service has been taking place in Leigh-on-Sea to celebrate the life of Sir David Amos. The Southend MP was stabbed to death in 2021 at one of his constituency surgeries in Belfair's Methodist Church. Our reporter Martha Tipper has been at the service.
One of Sir David Amos's wishes was to get the Music Man project to Broadway. Today, they're singing behind me to celebrate his life on the third anniversary of his death. I've been speaking to Sir David's successor, Anna Firth.
Sir David was an inspiration. He was the driving force behind our new city, and he will never be forgotten. May his light remain forever in Southend.
Flowers are being laid, including those from the Home Secretary and Rishi Sunak today.
Strictly star Oti Mabuse has been opening up about the challenges that she and her partner face raising a mixed-race child. The South African dancer had a baby with Romanian Marius last November. Speaking with Flurries during Black History Month, she's revealed how a recent European trip exposed them to the preconceptions people still have about race.
So I'm always with her. A lot of the time she's with me. But I was working. So I was like, you need to go traveling with her. So he had to go to Germany. Then he had to go to Zurich. Then had to go to Romania all by himself with this little mixed race baby.
Okay.
So the questions that he got, and he would call me, he's like, I never experienced what you experienced. I never got it to that capacity. First question, where's the mom? Why are you with the baby? What kind of mother is she that leaves the baby with the father? Where is she from? Your baby looks very, very different. She's so cute, but oh my gosh, touching the hair. Oh my gosh, her hair is so like, ooh, it's so different. It's all of that. And for the first time, he felt like protective over the fact that now he has to explain himself, which he didn't have to before. It was just me and him. Now he has to protect this little girl. And he also has to see what a microaggression is and know how to recognize one. Because before he'd be like, it's just a question. And I'm like, but it's not, is it? It's not. For the first time, he got asked at border control, show me proof that this is your child.
Yeah.
He's never had to show proof. But that was the first time that he was questioned. And for the first time, I think he felt uncomfortable. But it was a good learning curve for him.
Yeah.
Because now he's like, I'm going to travel more and I'm going to answer questions and I'm going to protect her more.
You can listen to that full story and from other celebrities on Raising the Next Generation. And Uber drivers in Glasgow are warning they're losing hundreds of pounds every week and not getting a fair share of profits from surge pricing. They've been protesting outside its office on Washington Street over concerns an electronic system offering fares to multiple drivers is putting safety at risk. Here's more from our senior reporter, Callum McQuaid.
What do we want? Fair pay! When do we want to know?
That's the feeling of around 100 drivers out in force here earlier. These protesters say their cars are taking a battering from all the mileage they're doing, and that's before the cost of repairs and replacements. I've been speaking to Gito, whose insurance went up by £1,000 this year. How much do you think you would make on a 12-hour shift?
Hardly you can get like £100, and I'd say like take it 120 or 150.
Shiraz is also unhappy with the way Uber handles complaints from customers.
That was an airport hire, and they reported Uber because they were expecting a bigger car, like a van or something, and Uber thought I was driving a different car, so they deactivated my account for 3 days.
Now, this argument could rumble on for quite some time, and I should add, we've approached Uber for a comment.
And if you'd like to find out more about any of those stories we've been talking about today, head on over to the news pages of our website, or you'll find the links on our socials, and be sure to come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.